Tonight, I wanted to share with you some reflections on this art, you could say, all of us are exploring together, the art of meditation. And when I reflect on this practice of meditation, it really does feel like a true art. It's something that takes training and refinement. And the other thing that comes with any kind of art is some kind of repetition. And it's like an art, a skill that needs a kind of practice. And it also has a kind of smoothness or a finesse that can also come with an art. And I feel it's a very important art in terms of our lives. The Buddha once said, whatever harm an enemy may do to you, that harm is far less than the harm that comes from an untrained mind. Interesting, isn't it? And then oppositely, whatever kind of benefits that we get from the closest of our colleagues and friends or people that support us, a trained mind is actually far greater of a support than even that. A mind that has been refined with this kind of art that we're exploring together. And tonight I want to talk about one aspect of training this mind, of learning this art. And it's this aspect of mindfulness of the noticing quality of what we're trying to cultivate, the noticing or knowing quality. And I want to share with you a quote from the Buddha where he's talking about what he's inviting us to notice, to know, to understand. Or the words that he uses is to attend to wisely. He begins, and how does a practitioner attend wisely? She attends wisely. This is suffering, or this is stress, or discontent. She attends wisely. This is the origin or the cause of suffering and discontent. She attends wisely. This is the cessation of that stress, of this discontent. And she attends wisely. This is the way leading to the cessation of stress and discontent. What is he enumerating here? The Four Noble Truths, right? This is the Four Noble Truths. The first truth is there is suffering or there's stress or discontent in our lives. And I want to point out, this sometimes gets translated as life is suffering or life is stressful. Actually, that's not the first noble truth. It's just the fact that being a human being involves difficulty. I mean, is there anyone in this room who has not experienced difficulty or stress? So then we know that this is an aspect of being a human being. This is what we want to come to understand. And he says the first noble truth, what we're trying to get to, is the first noble truth should be understood. And I want to go into detail what it means to understand the first noble truth. And then the second noble truth that we should attend to wisely is what's the cause? What's the cause of stress or discontent? And he proposes for us to explore and to see if this cause fits with our experience, namely that it's the Pali word is tanha, which is usually translated as craving. It's this tendency of the mind that doesn't really help us out of really grasping onto something or pushing something away, obsessing about things, checking out. This reactivity of the mind that what I've noticed has got me into trouble so many times. That's the second noble truth, and the second noble truth is to be the understanding that comes with that is to be abandoned, that cause. Then the third noble truth is the cessation. It's the cessation of the cause, because if the cause ceases, then the stress ceases. So it's the cessation of that craving, and that truth is to be realized. And then the fourth noble truth is the way leading to this liberation or this freedom of the heart, you could say. And that truth is to be developed. What's up with this in meditation? how do you bring this into what we're going to be doing in about 25 minutes? How do we bring a in-the-moment understanding of the Four Noble Truths? In a way of understanding this, I want to share with you an experience I had actually quite a few years ago. I was sitting a long retreat a few months at a place called the Forest Refuge. I went on retreat, the mind started to settle into the meditation practice, into the silence. And I think I even remember the distinct walking meditation. I think it was in the mid-morning, I was doing walking meditation. And these memories were coming up with these really difficult interactions I was having with this individual before I went on retreat, a number of them. And it felt like there was just this flood of challenging, not only challenging memories, but really wishing it was different, and just the challenge around this person. And I remember sitting with it, being with it, and of course, often what my mind does around difficulties like this is, one is, it starts to obsess about how it wishes that it was different. Like, I kept on rehearsing the things I wish I would have said. Boy, if I just would have said that, it would have... And of course, you can hear what was in that. Or I was wishing for the other person to be different. And then it would kind of spiral more and more the sense of, why is this happening to me? Why are all these memories happening to me on retreat? Maybe I'm doing something wrong with the practice. I mean, here I am on a meditation retreat, and then all these thoughts are coming up, and I can't get rid of them. They keep on coming. And here they are. I must be doing something wrong. If I'm not doing just something wrong, maybe it just means there's something wrong with me. Maybe I need to go see a psychologist or something like that. And psychology is a great thing. I'm just saying where my mind went. And then what started to arise was the realization of the first noble truth, which is, oh, this is suffering. And just that simple recognition was a huge turn. It was no longer there's something wrong with me. It was, oh, this is what it is to be a human being. This is a human experience that all human beings have, is being plagued by our minds. Ah, this is suffering. This was the beginning of understanding the First Noble Truth. Suffering is just like this. It feels just like this. This is what it's like. This is what stress feels like. And it's the human condition. It's not about what I'm doing wrong or right or how I got in here. It's just acknowledging that condition. And with that was the sense of, once I started to sink into it, was also getting a sense, which is very important about the Four Noble Truths, is that when I started to sense into it, it's sensing that it's actually an ennobling thing to be with. Another way of translating the Four Noble Truths is they're the four ennobling truths. When we come to really get them, they ennoble us. They make us nobility. But it's only when I touch my suffering and I'm with it that it starts to become something noble. It wasn't when I was trying to get rid of it or trying to figure it out. It's when I touched what it is to be a human being on that level. So I want to share with you a poem that I shared this weekend. It will be a repeat for those of you who are on the retreat. But it's a good poem, which I think speaks to this. It's entitled The Healing Time, and the poet is Pesha Gertler. She begins, Finally, on my way to yes, I bump into all the places where I said no to my life. I think it's my favorite first line of a poem. Finally, on my way to yes, finally I go on a retreat. Finally, I'm doing something where I feel like I'm on a different path. Finally, I'm on my way to yes. And then what happens? I bump into all the places where I said no to my life. All the untended wounds, the red and purple scars, those hieroglyphs of pain carved into my skin, my bones, those coded messages that send me down the wrong street again and again, where I find them, the old wounds, the old misdirections, and I lift them one by one close to my heart, and I say, holy, holy. Finally, on my way to yes, I bump into all the places where I said no to my life. All the untended wounds, the red and purple scars, those hieroglyphs of pain carved into my skin, my bones. Those coded messages that send me down the wrong street again and again, where I find them, the old wounds, the old misdirections. And I lift them one by one close to my heart, and I say, holy, holy. I'm moved by the language that she uses to describe all the places where she said no to her life, or more precisely, all the places that we've said no to our lives. They can have the feeling of being these hieroglyphs of pain that are carved into our skin or our bones. They're that deep. And then I so appreciate them. They're like these coded messages that send you down the wrong street. You ever had that feeling? Finally, you're starting to meditate. Finally, you're doing something different with your life. And then you bump into these old misdirections that seem to, these coded messages that seem to take you down the wrong street. And then what a significant turn to actually see that they're holy. They're holy and sacred things. These places where we've said no to our life. And I feel that this practice allows us to get a feeling sense of how they become holy, and that's when I begin to actually contact them. Well, this is what it is to be a human being. This is what stress and difficulty is like. And to really see it, so I'm engaging in the practice. So I noticed the fabric. I noticed the fabric of what was going on, right? What was going on? There were these memories, these thoughts that were arising when I was on retreat about this person. And then there would be emotions that came with that. Frustration or sadness or irritation. That was another layer to sense into, to actually feel. And then a very important layer to sense into is sensation, the feeling of the in the body of this. It was important not to understand, when the Buddha says to understand the First Noble Truth, it's not to intellectually get suffering, it's actually to feel it, to be with it, not to drown in it or be overwhelmed by it. And I want to make that distinction. We're not here to be overwhelmed by stress and suffering. You've probably experienced that. That's not very ennobling. We're looking for that sweet spot where we can be present with it. Of course, it's always messy, meditation. But to be present with it. So all these different layers of this experience that I was having. And what helped with this is that I needed to step away from the object that many of my emotions were directed at, that person. Because when I was lost in that person and what had happened, when I was lost in it, I wasn't actually touching the stress anymore. I was simply just lost in it. I was drowning in it in some way. This is the noticing that we're trying to train the mind in, is to notice what's going on, which is a different feeling than being lost or drowning in it. And I notice these different things. Oh, that's just a thought. That's just a memory. That's a sensation. That's an emotion. And I'm here just to be with it and feel it. I don't need to figure it out. I don't even need to know why it's coming up. I need to see it in the present moment, because that's how I understand the First Noble Truth. And that's how it becomes ennobling. Just a side note, there is going to be a retreat in October, which there is going to be a flyer coming out probably next week, that we're really going to focus on, the retreat will focus on meditation in terms of body and body sensation, because I found it, when I reflect, it's probably been one of the biggest keys for that has made such a difference in my life, is being present with sensation in the body. It really has been a profound effect. Also, what I want to point out about this being with is that it's not the process of holding on to it. It's not like it came up and I say to myself, oh, I want to work on this, and I try to drudge it up again and again and again. I'm simply being present with it with whatever rhythm that it has. So on retreat, sometimes it would arise, and it'd be there very briefly. Like, it would just be the memory, maybe I have an emotion, I feel it, and then it'd disappear, and then I'd feel my feet walking, I'd be back to the breath, and that was it. Other times, it felt like it would linger for the whole meditation, you know, sitting meditation, maybe a sitting meditation and a walking meditation, and it would just kind of linger on and on. But I wasn't deciding to kind of, one, push it away or to keep it and kind of explore it in that way. I'm just allowing it to manifest however it wants to, you could say, in that moment. So I'm not even there to really work on it. Do you hear the difference of this? It's not about working on it or making it into some kind of process. It's just noticing its rhythm and noticing the fabric of it when it's there and noticing that it does disappear at times. And that in itself can be really liberating, because often when I have a problem like that in my life, the thought comes of, this is always plaguing me. This is continual, when it's actually not the case. It's coming and going, and there can be some relief just in that, of seeing that this discontent, this stress is actually a fluid phenomenon. So again, this is the first noble truth. This is what it is to understand stress. It's your willingness to sense into and to feel the difficulties in your life. And when you feel them, then they become ennobling. It's beginning to cultivate the attitude that when there is difficulty and stress in your life, there's a sense of, yeah, cool. This will deepen my meditation. This is really great stuff. Actually, just before I got here, Molly sent me a great email of something along this line. There's this health psychologist that by the name of Kelly McGonigal. Maybe you know this. It's just a trip. She's doing some of her stuff on this research. I haven't looked at the research, so I don't know enough of details about it, but it's on the surface quite interesting. And I just want to read this to you. She said, people who experienced a lot of stress in the previous year had a 43% increased risk of dying, which is pretty. This is something we know about stress, is that it can do this. But this is the interesting thing. But that was only true for the people who also believed that stress is harmful for your health. People who experience a lot of stress but did not view stress as harmful were no more likely to die. In fact, they had the lowest risk of dying of anyone in the study, including people who had relatively little stress. So there's a there's a perk that comes with noticing that stress and suffering is ennobling. It's good for your health too. Not only to liberate your heart, but it's helps with heart disease as well.
So I have a chance of not dying, is that?
I know, that's what you get with research and science.
That's another study.
Exactly. Actually, I think there's usually more truth in a poem than. But it's the religion of the modern world, so it's good to bring it in a little bit. Okay, the first noble truth, understanding from this experiential level. Second noble truth, it's beginning to realize what the cause of all the stress was around this. And again, I want to point out, when I was meditating on this, when these memories were coming up, I wasn't saying to myself, okay, now I need to figure out the cause of all this. I was actually doing the same exact thing that I was doing that I was just describing. I was simply being with it. That's it. I was not looking for something else. Oh, maybe this is about fear. Maybe this is about fear of being abandoned. I'm not looking for something that's not there. So this is very important in meditation. Sometimes we're trying to find something that's might not be apparent. We just need to notice what's apparent. You just need to notice what's coming into awareness. That will work itself. And then with repetition, what started to become clear was, in some ways, the obvious. The roots of the problem. The roots of the problem was not that person. It was that there was a memory arising, and then there was a reactivity around the memory. There was a kind of obsessing around the memory in a way of wanting it to be different. I don't want this memory. I want it to be different. I want the past to be different. I want a different memory. And there was the craving. There was the aversion there. The reactivity around a thought pattern, a thought that was arising. And again, I didn't need to figure out why it was arising. I just needed to see what was arising, that it was a memory filled with thought, and that emotion would come out with it, and then that was entangled with this reactivity that was causing stress. And that's all I needed to do, was to notice that. That's it. And through noticing, what begins to happen is there's another thing that begins to do its work. You could say wisdom begins to do its work. And when I started to see that again and again on the retreat, the grip of obsession started to loosen. It started to disentangle from the experience and fall away. And when that fell away, there's no more stress around these thoughts. And actually, the thoughts dissipated. And then that's the third noble truth, which is the cessation of suffering, because at least on one flavor. Just, it's broader, the third noble truth, but one flavor of that is when the cause ends, there's a cessation of that. There's a freeing of the heart. The heart is free in a way, it can be present. Two important things about this. Remember, the task for the second noble truth is to abandon the cause. How did I abandon the cause? Doing the same thing that was happening for the first noble truth, simply noticing. And then the way I like to understand it is, when I do my job, wisdom does its job. It's wisdom's job to let go of it. It's not my job. Letting go happens naturally when I notice. Because then the mind gets it. This isn't worth obsessing about. This is just about suffering when I get involved in this. And then once the mind really gets that, then it lets go. So this gets tricky. If I feel like my job is to let go, I've tried to take that job description. It's just bad news, because then I haven't really experienced the first noble truth enough, or really saw the roots enough on a feeling sense for the mind to really let go. So make sure that you allow wisdom to do its job and you keep your job. Your job is just notice. It's very simple. You don't have to take a second job. It's very easy. Just a very simple job description, to notice what's going on and to accept it. Also, I want to point out something about this as well, in terms of this, is that when this process of letting go happens, it doesn't mean that the phenomenon just disappears, right? So if I'm holding on and I'm obsessed with this bell and there's a loosening around it, it doesn't necessarily disappear, this whole tangle, immediately. It could take a while. Who knows how long it takes? It might take days, it might take weeks. But eventually, with more space, it dissipates. So this is another important thing. Sometimes we are checking our practice so much and think, is it working? Not working? Shouldn't this be over by now? I mean, I've been stressing out about this for like a year now, and I'm practicing, and it seems like the timeline's off. Again, that's not in our job description, right, to figure that out. Our job description is to notice and to continue to notice. And that can be a big hook in this practice, is we think we know what the timeline is. You ever notice that? I should be over grieving by now. I know. I mean, I think most people say like a year or 2 years or something like that. I can't believe it's coming up again. It shouldn't be. This is the process of abandonment. Wisdom takes care of the abandonment. This is what it is to abandon. And then the third noble truth is the realization of that. It's when wisdom does its job, it's to notice, oh, interesting. Oh, there's relief from that, because the cause has dissipated. And I come to realize that. I see that. And there's a clarity around that. And we can only get that clarity by going through and being with stressful situations, because then we can see how it can disintegrate or dissipate. And then the fourth noble truth. How do we practice that? How do we come to develop that? Again, the task for the fourth noble truth is to develop that in our meditation. One part of this fourth noble truth in terms of what we're doing in this very moment with meditation is beginning to know and to notice the states of mind that lead to the unfolding of this path, that lead to this heart being liberated. And the Buddha, for some reason, he loved lists. So there's all these different kinds of lists of wholesome states of mind. There are things like the obvious one is mindfulness. Mindfulness, when the mind is concentrated, or when the mind is concentrated, there can be mindfulness, concentration, tranquility, joy, happiness, equanimity. All of these are wholesome states of mind, loving kindness and compassion, sympathetic joy. All these are qualities of the heart that lead us onward towards a liberated heart. And again, when they arise in your meditation, when you're doing formal meditation, what do? We notice them. And we feel them. We savor them. It's so important to learn the skill of savoring when there's a wholesome state of mind, like when the mind is a little bit more tranquil, when you notice a little bit more calmness. To savor that there's a moment of mindfulness. To savor when joy arises, to really savor it without grasping. And that's all that's needed. With that attention, these wholesome states of mind are developed, they grow, they're being watered and nurtured. The tricky thing about it is actually seeing them. It's easier to see the difficulties in our life. It's much more difficult to notice these good qualities that are popping up in your life. It's an art. It's a refined art to see them and to savor them. And sometimes what I'll do in a meditation is I'll just check in. I'll check in to notice what's going on right now. Are there any wholesome states of mind? And I know when I'm doing that, I know that there's one wholesome state of mind right there. There's mindfulness. So that's the nice thing about checking in. He's always already got one. There might be other ones. There might be just a little bit more calmness or tranquility than when you began sitting. There might be a little bit of equanimity of what's towards what's arising. Noticing that, a little bit of concentration, the mind's a little bit stable. There might be some kindness or compassion within that. Notice it, savor it. And that's fulfilling the fourth noble truth. And then I'd like to end with a story during the Buddha's time. So the story goes, once upon a time, this celestial being came to the Buddha and basically said, "What's up with all your practitioners? When I see them, their faces are so bright and serene." And a lot of times there's these descriptions of other practitioners being not so bright and serene. How does this come about? And the Buddha replies to the celestial beings, and he says, "They don't sorrow over the past and don't long for the future. They survive on the present. That's why their faces are bright and serene." When we get obsessed with longing for the future or obsessed with sorrowing over the past, fools wither away like a green reed cut down. They don't sorrow over the past, don't long for the future. They survive on the present. I feel seeing these Four Noble Truths within our practice is how we survive, how we nurture ourselves on the present, by seeing that in the present moment. What a beautiful thing to have faces bright and serene, and to have lives bright and serene.